Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the fabulous Fireside Room, today's speakers are Barbara and Mike Burr, and they will be speaking on step families, cycles, and cyclones. So let's listen in on Mike and Barbara Burr.
We are in a step family, and we've been married for 7 years, almost, August 1st. And let's see, I have all of you, well, we got into this and didn't really know what we were doing. We thought we would know what we were doing. I had been trained as a teacher. He is a pastor and has been a marriage and family counselor for about 20 years. And we got in the middle of stage two and kind of panicked. So I also work in a library and found a great book called Stepfathering and took it home and said, let's read this. And so that's kind of where we started, and Mike decided that he wanted to get his doctor of ministry, and that was the topic, was blended families in the church. So that's our beginning. And then we wanted to, for those who haven't heard, these are the two books that we have in the bookstore, Strengthening Your Step Family by Elizabeth Einstein and Linda Albert, and Making Peace in Your Step Family, Harold Bloomfield, both really excellent books.
The Bloomfield book is in paperback, so.
Don't be intimidated, the price is a lot better.
Right. We have three children between us. 10, 11, and 13-year-old, two girls, and a boy. And in our lives together, we have encountered a lot of the typical dynamics of dealing with step families.
And one thing we haven't said before is we've also had different living arrangements. Originally, all five of us lived in the house and we had full custody, and now for the last 3 years, his daughter has lived with her mother, and she comes and visits us on weekends and holidays and summer vacation. So we've had full-time step families and part-time step families.
How do the kids like that?
I think the arrangement is pretty good. I think the person that suffered the greatest has been Mike. That's been the hardest.
No, not him.
Me.
Mike.
Oh.
You.
Yeah.
He has suffered the greatest. His daughter has had a hard time too, but she had been requesting for many years to live with her mother. So we gave her the opportunity to live with her mother. My children, it hasn't really affected them in any ways that I can observe. We're a pretty busy family, and so they have lots of friends. And
how good are kids at covering up?
They're not that good at covering up, and
I just didn't mean your kids.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm thinking of my granddaughter.
Tell us, Shannon, how good are they at covering up?
Christina,
I thought you were Shannon. I'm sorry, Christina. How good are they at covering up?
I don't.
I can't say what anybody else, but I don't.
If she did cover up, she'd be good enough to cover it up so we wouldn't know.
Yeah, I think.
I think kids can be very, very skilled at it. If they get the message from parents that something is not a pleasant topic, they'll bury it.
Denial?
Yeah. Or they will also try to protect parents.
Oh.
From the truth that they know.
What we wanted to cover today was the six stages that a step family typically goes through to a point of resolution, a family that stays together and doesn't end up in a divorce themselves. So.
And as we talk about these, recognize that this isn't just a mechanical progression that families go through from stage one to two to three, but it's an ebb and a flow. Families all begin in stage one and go to two and back to one and up to three and back to two and up to four and back to one, and it's kind of a dynamic mix. Very often you have a web of people involved in a family, and not everybody will be in the same place at the same time. And so, to get the whole family to move and to integrate is a dynamic process. It's not a mechanical progression.
And then when you change the structure of the family, like when Mike's daughter moved and went to live with her mother, then that changes what stage the whole family will move into. And then when she comes back for the summer for a full 3 months, then that changes again what stage we're into again.
You know, so understand these as kind of rough faces.
And what we like to do today is to try to make it through all six stages and talk about each stage and then stop at the end of each stage and then open it up to discussion on how it's gone in your own lives or friends or relatives.
Just one other comment. The stages that the step family goes through in developing cohesiveness are very similar to the stages that any group of people go through in terms of forming community. One way that you can look at the development of the step family is as the process of the small group of people developing community. The family community.
Teamwork has also been called forming, storming, norming, and performing. Kind of think of that.
That's
cute little. Well, the first stage is the fantasy stage. And the adults are in a fantasy that this is the marriage that they've always wanted. This is going to be it. That last one didn't count, or for somebody who was single that's marrying in, this is the marriage they always wanted, the perfect thing.
The first one was just a trauma.
And the children are often in another fantasy, and their fantasy very often is they're hoping that the parents, the biological parents, will still get back together again. Okay? Anybody can they relate to that at all?
And then there's a smile over.
Wouldn't you then be fantasizing that now they're going to get a mom or daddy or whatever that's going to be better than?
Yeah, that goes on.
That can go along with it. That can be another part of it, especially if the mommy or daddy has died.
Yeah.
I know.
Or been really abusive and. Just totally disappeared.
And I think you told me in your case, when your mother remarried when you were six, your thought was, oh good, now I'm going to get a dad.
Right. Just mentioned about Ruth, my daughter, that, you know, it was 4 years after, we were married, and she was still fantasizing about her mother and I getting back together. Remember one conversation that I had with her after her mother remarried, and she was trying to figure out what it would look like for us to all live together. With her new stepfather and with her stepmother, but, you know, with her biological parents back together. And that, you know, that fantasy dies hard.
Well, and probably another thing that Mike isn't even aware of is about 2 months ago, I was giving one of his daughter's dresses away because it didn't fit any longer, and I was giving it to my daughter's friend, and so they were going through the pockets of it, and they found this little card in there, and the dress was just bought last year. She's grown out of it that fast, so on the bottom of the card is one of our church cards, and it says, "I wish," and then people in the church are supposed to fill it in, and so she had written, "I wish my mommy and daddy were married still." Or gotten back together. And so this is 6 years into the marriage that she had written this. So that fantasy still. My perception is sometimes the fantasy stays stronger when the biological parent lives farther away. I rarely hear my children talking about that. And their dad lives about 4 blocks away. So I think part of that fantasy doesn't have as much to do with mommy and daddy marrying again as child wanting to have both parents all the time.
Do your ex or your ex-spouses cooperative with the kids? Pretty good about it?
It's had its moments of goodness and badness, but generally even keel.
Pretty much so.
Yeah.
That can be a factor you sometimes can't have any control over.
Oh
yeah. You know, there are certainly aspects that you know cause us upset. We certainly disagree with the parenting styles of our exes. You know, the amount of television, Nintendo, that kind of stuff that her kids get, the amount of food that my daughter gets, mother uses food as a narcotic.
And you know, other fantasies that are interesting that you know, again, using our own example, I was teaching a Sunday school for 4th through 6th graders, and we were talking about what we wished we could tell our parents. And I asked our 3 children also to speak about what you could tell your other parent. And Ruth piped up with she wanted to talk to her mother and stepfather about how she wished they would quit fighting and that they were fighting over her. And I was kind of going, yes, because all those years I've been the wicked stepmother, and he, since she didn't live with him, he was the great Disneyland stepdaddy. And he was just tons of fun, and that was the fantasy that they had lived in for years. And then when she moved over there, then he became, you know, the cruel stepfather. And so it was kind of nice for me to see that fantasy was dispelled, because I know there was a lot of comparison going on even in a young child's mind. But again, to point out that there is dissonance between what the children's fantasies are oftentimes and what the adult's fantasies are in that first stage.
Maybe fantasy is not the best title. This is a real normal stage in the beginning of any relationship, that we have these idealizations of what it's going to be like. It's a common stage in the beginning of a first-time marriage, you know, that a couple comes together and they have these ideals of, you know, what married life is going to be like. It's the proverbial honeymoon period. Mm-hmm. Before reality strikes.
I think what the different fantasy or additional fantasy is that we're going to do it right this time. We got a second chance, so we're going to do it right this time. And as we said, there are no perfect families, there are no perfect step families, and you know, the perfect step family is an illusion. And you know, there is no Brady Bunch. And besides, their family was perfect because they had Alice, you know. Alice did all the dishes and she did all the cooking, and so there's never any argument about anything. And so we love to talk about the Brady Bunch. There's also an additional problem with this fantasy stage. If either of the parents are in the mental health profession or they're teachers, so counselors or teachers or pastors, which is what we were, and so you think, well, I've read all the books, I know how to work through things, I know how to talk to people, but it's similar to the physician doing surgery on their own child. You can't keep a rational, you know, approach to it. You're emotionally involved. So you fool yourself. You know what you're doing. Let's see. And then again, that fantasy of the child whose biological parent has died, this is going to be my new dad. And what was your stepfather's reaction to that when you said, oh good, now I have a dad?
Well, for me, that was kind of a disappointment. You know, when they came home from the wedding, I have this memory of them getting out of the car, and I said, "Hi, Dad," and he just snapped at me, "Don't call me that."
Well, that relationship probably should have been developed a little before the marriage, shouldn't it?
Well, yeah, there
to a certain degree,
and probably would have helped.
So. That was in the early 50s,
yeah.
When divorce was another part of the fantasy that I don't know that we've read so much in any of the books, but just observe, is a lot of step families will not even acknowledge that they're step families. We lived in a neighborhood that was dubbed Fertility Flats. There were a lot more children than there were adults in every house. But, you know, around just one or two blocks, we had counted five or six step families. But these people were not calling themselves step families.
They didn't want to acknowledge the fact that.
And one family had ended up having a son that was basically a juvenile delinquent. One family ended up divorcing. Another family is separated. So I think you've got to give it a name. You've got to see. We've had people in our step family classes that have come because somebody else paid for it or something. And, oh, well, we're just here because we want to hear. Never saying, well, we're a step family and we might really have these issues to deal with. So some of them seem to stay stuck in the fantasy stage in some ways for years.
For instance, in one of the families, the father, the man wasn't the biological father of one of the girls, although he had been married to the mother at the time of her birth. And so, part of his fantasy was that biological connection wouldn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. But there's something very basic about that is very difficult to explain. Because anybody standing outside of that family could tell that his biological daughter, who came along 3 or 4 years later, was the apple of his eye. And the non-biological daughter, he just didn't have the connection or the affection for.
And I think when the second daughter came and it became evident to everybody, I think that's where the marriage started to disintegrate
and
quickly.
And, you know, if you don't have some framework for explaining and understanding that, then it gets real hurtful and real painful for everyone involved.
It sounds like, instead of the word fantasy, it almost sounds like denial. You know, they're denying that the reality of things and trying to just go beyond it and say, this isn't really the issue, this isn't really happening.
Right.
It's going to be different for us.
Well, I'm not even sure stepfamily was in some of their vocabulary.
Yeah.
They did not even identify themselves.
So. Yeah, that's why I think of denial more than
fantasy.
Because fantasy almost sounds like something nice, and this is messy.
Well, yeah, it's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Fantasy slash denial.
Right.
Yeah.
Because some families get...
Oh, my goodness.
you know, some families get stuck at the fantasy stage, and as they start moving into the later stages, they deny the reality.
Mm-hmm.
No, this isn't happening. We're really going to have this fantasy. You know, and rather than acknowledging the reality of the relationships as they develop, they hide from it, and it does become a denial process.
And it's easier to hide from it if, in a couple of these cases, the biological father was, in both these cases, the biological father had been abusive, had been molesting children in a school setting, so it was like, you're dead, you know, in the mother's mind. So in two of these cases, the father was dead, and the children never saw the father.
Yeah.
And that's how I think can perpetrate that fantasy or denial that we are not a step family because there is no other person out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was wondering about this non-biological daughter. She certainly must have known and felt what was happening.
Oh, it was very
obvious. Yeah, she was miserable.
She's the saddest little girl.
Well, that would drive her to distraction, wouldn't it?
Certainly didn't do her any good.
She was, as an example of how can you tell how the children are behaving, part of her acting out was perfectionism. And as quite a young girl, she was a gymnast, and she was on the team. And she was performing just excellent. She was just fabulous. And she was making herself totally miserable. Every meet, she was crying, she was in tears. It was just blow up after blow up with the mother, and they finally said, let's just stop this gymnastics thing. But to me, when you're asking how can you tell, it's, you know, whether the kids are covering up, I saw that as her behavior as a symptom, the perfectionist as a way of trying to be acceptable to this dad, our stepdad.
I think someone skilled in your professions like you are could spot it much easier than someone like me who's a layperson, especially someone like me who has denied my anger and buried it.
Well, we talked about yesterday, you know, saying in the profession, but again, for Mike and his own daughter, she would go into this whatever her acting out was, and I would go, hey, I think you need to talk to Ruth. So,
as,
you know, he was the mental health professional, but she is his own child, and he just could never see it. And
too,
I would
too close.
He was just too close. So, but having me there to, you know, see what the cause was, and we would get her to talk, and it was very much the same thing. I want my mommy and daddy to get back together again. But in this very same household were my children going, I wouldn't want you to live with Dad again because all you did was argue. So
they
very much
a good relationship between them.
Yeah, and I throw in this factor that their dad was three blocks away. And I'm convinced that the necessity to have us under the same roof wasn't that driving because they're so involved with their dad. Whereas her mom was so far away. I think that adds into the fantasy.
Mm-hmm. But the case is unequal to love the children is certainly not confined to step-parents.
No.
Certainly not.
But one of the differences there is that I think in the biological family, the biological connection gives some sense of security that isn't there in the step family. In the step family, when there's that loss or absence of affection, what comes up in the mind of a child is the fear of the loss of a second family.
Well, the impossible expectation, there's no way the child can actually meet the qualifications of being his.
Right.
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 Exactly.
Right. And you just have to do away with the expectation. We need to
stage two.
Move on to a stage two, which is where reality starts coming home. And stage one can last a variety of lengths, from 2 days to 2 months to 2 years, depending on the structure of the step family, the amount of interaction with the children, with exes. There are so many variables that it's hard to put a specific time period on. But stage two is when the reality starts coming out that this family structure isn't going to be the first time nuclear family. It's not going to be the Brady Bunch. It's when loyalty conflicts begin emerging. People start sensing that there's something wrong, but they may not quite be sure of what it is. Suppressed feelings start coming out. Step parents start becoming anxious that this marriage is going to fail too because it's not living up to their expectations. The role confusions start coming out. It starts becoming evident that a step parent, a stepfather, for instance, may not have the same authority for discipline that a biological father has. That a stepmother can't do the same kind of nurturing with a stepchild that a biological mother does. And so people start trying to figure out, if people don't fit into these traditional roles, then what do we do with them? Who's on first?
And I think it becomes heightened when there are children from both marriages living in the home. And I think yesterday or the day before, we talked about getting the kids ready for church. And as a biological mother, my daughter, doing her hair, braiding up her hair was a real act of love and connection. And so I would try to do that with his daughter, and she would just scream. I was combing her hair too hard, or she didn't want to sit still, or it wasn't ever you're not my mother verbally, but so that was where a lot of it started to fall through, because I was trying to help her dress so she'd be really cute, and I went through all her drawers and took out all the clothes that kind of looked old, and all of that was really resented, but I thought it was a good motherly thing to do.
Is that a transference from the anger about a divorce?
I think it could be.
Some of it could
I
be,
think
yeah.
It could be.
So she got to take it out on somebody.
Well, and anger about the divorce, also anger about the remarriage. As a single parent, she had a very specific place in my household. She was only child. Got a lot of attention. When we went places, it was her and I. And so, she was daddy's special little girl. Get married, who's this other woman?
And now she had to share love again.
Yeah.
And
you had to share love. And she felt that.
Yeah. And a resentment there.
And there was a high sense of abandonment because her mother had left her and her father. She left physically and moved away. So in a 2 or 3 year old mind, that's very, very much abandonment. So then he marries me and showing me attention. And so I think in her mind, it was just another abandonment.
Don't some of those things get not taken care of, but that is, I've been encountered before you get married? Not real thoroughly. Before you're married, before we were married, Barb wasn't there all the time. It's like the example used the other day. In the morning, Ruth was used to getting up, and she'd come in and bounce on the bed and snuggle with Dad some. After we got married Saturday morning, she comes in and opens the door and to bounce on the bed, and there's somebody else in bed. At that point she's not real welcome. To come bounce on the bed. So there are dynamics that can only be dealt with after the marriage, and just has to be expected that those dynamics will be there. And so
and that also something to bring up: when a parent has been living singly with an opposite sex child for some time, you are really can often border on emotional, sort of incestual. And it's not like it's conscious, it's just that the little girl with the daddy kind of becomes the woman figure in the house.
Deal.
And they snuggle up together to eat popcorn and watch a Friday night video. Whereas maybe daddy had done that with the wife, or a male and a female or whatever would be doing that on a date. And so
the little boy becomes the man of the house.
And so it gets a little bit, and that's often a problem when you're talking about one parent, one child. When there are more children, that dynamic doesn't seem to take place as often because the parent is, giving their attention to two of them. And then they go play together a lot.
Well, do you feel then, you mentioned something that kind of triggered me, if a person is separating, even before they've gone through the grief or anything else, wouldn't it be wise then to try to treat the young boy and the young girl as a young boy and a young girl, and don't try to make them the man or the lady of the house?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
So they won't be offended when someone else takes that role.
It's not even conscious. I think it's just when there's just two of them,
yeah,
and it's Friday night, and you're watching a video and snuggling, then when there's me with two children, it just doesn't create the same dynamic. I don't think there's any intention that the woman's making the boy the man of the house. I think it just sort of naturally happens when there's one child.
Well, I understand that being the case.
I don't think it's
a lot of people promote that, saying that.
I know they do.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think they should do. They should let the little child be a little child.
Yeah.
I think you're mistaken about the one child, because the dynamics happen pretty regularly across a single parent families. It happens more with the eldest child.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in the single parent family is if that family coalesces and the adult very often uses the children as companions, and they talk back and forth, and so that they become a unit as a single parent family. And what we're talking about here is that the process of readjustment as that family has to open up that web of interactions to include someone else.
And another example that's kind of a little off, but will give you an idea of how the children take on responsibility, is my ex-husband is not remarried, and now my children are starting to make money mowing lawns, and they get pretty good allowances. So they're out spending $10 and $20 for Father's Day and for my ex-husband's birthday. And when it's my birthday, they're going to come over to Mike and get money to do it. But my point is, I'm taking these kids out and they're spending oodles of money for their dad for their birthday because they know that there's nobody else to do it. Kind of like what we were talking in the singles forum last night. There's nobody else to celebrate their dad's birthday, so they're going to take the responsibility to buy him big enough presents. But with me, it's just like, well, whatever, you know, whatever that. And it's not, and I don't take offense at it because I understand that they have put themselves in the role of being a little bit more mature and responsible about meeting their dad's needs. Mm-hmm. So the kids add into it. It's not just what the adult is doing.
Okay. Also in stage two, as reality starts to emerge and as the conflicts begin, children sense the emerging tension and anxiety builds as they've all already been through one loss. And the fear of another loss comes, and so this stage is really kind of the crux of stepfamily development, where the couple needs to decide whether they're going to work through the issues, do the learning that's necessary, or whether they're going to call it quits.
Okay. Are there any more questions or going to stage three? Okay, awareness or making sense of the stew. This is where you start to give the problems names. You start to call it like it is. And one of Mike's favorite examples is when I cook this great dinner and spend all this time, and his kid doesn't like it. Yeah, I'm not gonna eat this. Then when he makes the same menu about 3 weeks later, she has second help. And early on, there was this little about it, but I got, but it was kind of funny because like you say, you're moving in and out of these stages. Well, just 3 or 4 months ago, Mike was trying this new recipe to help lower cholesterol, and so he worked so hard at making the stew, and my kids picked at it. And boy, he was just a whole bit grumpy when we got up to, do the dishes. And I was like, oh, and I'm kind of like, well, now you see, oh, I get that chance in these dual things. This is typically the stage when the step parent becomes the squeaky wheel.
What?
The squeaky wheel.
Oh.
And they kind of just swallowed it for a while. And now they're going to start talking about what they don't like and how they feel like they're on the out. And when you've got two people who are step-parents, that really...
You have two squeaky wheels. Very often about different issues. And so it just gets that much more complex.
Amazing.
And noisy.
This is often when the step-parent needs outside support. So in our case, we both needed outside support. And that's oftentimes when support groups are formed. If you can't find one in your city or town, a lot of times people will get the materials from Step Family Association of America, and they can lead groups, lead workshops. This is where people will go to their pastor or to their counselor and try to get help. This is where we went to try to get help. We live in an area that has about 40,000 people.
And 20,000 counselors.
Yeah. And we said, okay, well, we'll try to find a counselor that has been a step parent. Well, we found somebody, but she didn't live with these children. She was just a step parent. And it got to be kind of a problem. And this is where Meg also had decided to go ahead with his doctor of ministry and step families. But it was very frustrating. And I caution people to be careful with their counselors, because if they don't know anything about step families, you can come out of there just feeling shamed and angry and not being heard, because the dynamics are different.
If a counselor goes in expecting a stepmother to behave like a biological mother,
run. Big real and run. But definitely, if you're recommending somebody go to counseling, or if you're going to counseling, find out what their experience with step families are. The least they should be reading up on Vischer and Vischer. Emily and John Vischer, they should at least have some background knowledge if they're going to be working with you on that. This is often the time when the biological parent is sailing through and thinking everything is just fine. And they're so surprised when the step parent starts the squeaky wheel, because they think everything's just going really well. And I think that's something that was going on for you in particular at this stage. Do you mm-hmm. want to share that?
Well, just that I think Barb was feeling like the dynamics within the family were going like she wanted them. Yeah. I was feeling lost there in terms of my ideals and expectations about, you know, what I wanted for family. You know, I was still stuck back up in the fantasy stage and being disappointed that she wasn't being, you know, the mother to my child that she should have been.
And part of that goes back to what we talked about yesterday about resolving your original relationship. And I think in this particular instance, Mike had some very strong issues with his ex-wife regarding her ability to be an effective parent. And so his fantasy was, all right, I'm marrying this woman, she's got two kids, they're great kids, and they seem like everything's on base, she's been a good parent, she'll pick up and do for my daughter what I don't think my ex-wife can do. And that was the fantasy. And then there I am trying to comb her hair. And she's screaming, and I'm like, ah! So, you know, the combing the hair was just incident after incident of that sort of thing, where I wasn't meeting his expectations and he was getting mad at me. So, that's pretty much stage three. Any thoughts you want to share? Any of that ringing for you? True?
I think that my dad knew that my mom was a good parent.
So after the awareness comes, the next stage is getting mobilized, or what I call rocking the boat. People here either have to choose to rock the boat or they jump ship. It's one way or the other. Again, the step parent generally becomes the change agent within the family, and as they try to deal with feelings of exclusion and dissatisfaction and discomfort, issues may appear to be trivial. But what it comes down to is everyone getting their needs met. I know after we got married, my ex, I forget exactly what the situation is, she would periodically send me gifts and what Bart calls love letters. She'd say things like, I always loved you and I always will. I hope you enjoy this.
This is the woman that left him, though.
Yeah.
Trying to undermine your relationship.
And in my mind, I had always kind of considered her superficial expressions of love as being so much fluff. And so I'd get this stuff and go, yeah. It wasn't anything to me. I'd throw the letter over my shoulder and go on about my business. Bart would come along behind, pick up the letter, and go ballistic. What do you mean she always like?
Why didn't she stay married to you then?
Yeah, so it was trivial for me, but it was very important for Bart. So I had to deal with that. Tell my ex, don't send me this crap. I don't want it.
But it's as we relate the story, it sounds really nice, but literally fight after fight after fight about why don't you tell your ex-wife to butt out of our lives, because she chose to leave you, we chose to get married, she needs to go on with her own life. And she made her choices, so...
Yeah. And what it was in this instance was a kind of territorial thing of Barb not wanting this other person.
Kind of what you're still
sticking their face into our life. So I had to hear that this wasn't trivial.
But my point is, he heard it many, many times before he took action.
Right.
Before he finally wrote a letter and said, I am your ex-husband. I am not your husband. Please do not do this. And it was finally, if you send this, if you continue to send things when we've asked you not to, we will just package them up and send them back to you. Mm-hmm. And we had to finally do that one time after she continued to send them. And she called him up and yelled at him, told him he was immature.
But she never did it again, so fine, I'll be...
But that's the example. Now, that's not an example as much of a step-family with children issue as a remarriage issue.
Yeah.
But when you have the children, then they're... she can legitimately do the birthday thing for the kids. So you've got this,
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's where this lack of control comes. And one Easter, she sent probably $50 to $75 worth of presents to our house to her daughter for Easter. And we opened it up ahead of time and said, this is not how we celebrate Easter. We believe it is a Christian holiday, and a few little candy things is fine, but present on present. And the other children in the house aren't getting this, and you really
So again, we had said, go and give these gifts, do it at your house, mm-hmm. But don't send it.
So to the outside observer, it's trivial, but as the family, you have to come together and make your boundaries and set your limits, or you're going to make yourselves crazy.
Yeah. There can be other trivial things. It can be like, are you eating white bread or wheat bread? The issue can be very, very minor, but what is happening is that you're talking about issues of control and inclusion and belonging here. Do you have something?
That boundary issue, I have seen that ahead of time. I was quite involved with a man, and he had children, and he was not setting boundaries with his ex and was unwilling. I mean, this was just in a dating process that was, you know, mm-hmm. making, and we got to the point where we were deciding which way to go, and I bailed out because I couldn't see that he was willing to set boundaries with his ex, and it, to me it felt like signing a death certificate, you know, to get further involved. I thought, I'm out of here.
Well, they tell us...
Because she was just pulling his strings. Mm-hmm. He'd go to pick up the kids on Friday night, and the kids wouldn't be there. And he was just like, oh, well.
He wouldn't deal with it.
I could just see myself in this situation to where it would triangulate and...
Yeah, they tell stories of biological mothers calling their children at the father's house mm-hmm. every day, three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And just behaviors or leaving messages on tape machines like 40 times mm-hmm. in one day.
Yes.
You know, things like that where you have to set. But there are other trivial things that, you know, I had a situation where a woman wanted to get rid of the futon that her new husband and his wife had used. And the mother of the woman just couldn't figure out why she wanted to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes people from the outside can't see. It just seems so stupid. Why would you want to get rid of a perfectly good mattress?
Mm-hmm. But the boundary issues, if you see
I think that's probably, to be quite frank with you, that's where most of our fights were.
Yeah. I saw this ahead of time and saw that it wasn't a workable situation because he couldn't hear that he needed to set any boundaries. He was fine the way things were, and I knew it would just mm-hmm. drive me. It was going to escalate. It wasn't going to even stay the same.
I agree with you, and I also don't think that he probably ever has resolved the loss of marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we need to zip through the last stages here. I always hate to do this. stage four here can be very painful. It's and the couple needs to recognize that everybody is in pain here. Focus needs to be on maintaining the couple relationship as the solid base of the family, and then listening with compassion to the pain that is coming out, and trying to let that be expressed, but not necessarily control what happens in the family. A lot of couples find that they can't fight openly here without just tearing everything apart, and instead of getting outside help, they'll return to an earlier stage, and where they'll withdraw, family will separate into warring camps or into isolated camps. It's again real important to push through the pain here, so that the real healing can take place.
Okay, stage five, action and commitment, or choosing to work together. The energy and expressiveness loosens up the old biological family structures and it makes way for building up the new one that you need to have, a cohesive step family. And where the fights in the early stages didn't have much momentum, and then in the fourth stage they were pretty hairy fights, now the partners are on the same side and they're trying to figure out how to balance everyone's needs and feelings.
Maybe one of the ways to talk about that is that instead of arguing about who's right, to get to the point of trying to determine what's right. So,
and I would guess with ourselves that we're kind of always hovering between stage four and stage five at this point in our marriage. We can't claim to be in stage six yet. If you want to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think we sort of bounce between stage four and five and six. We're getting there.
And I think it's good to try to peg yourself at what stage you're at.
you know, four years ago, we thought that we were in stage six, but then we were delusional.
We were still in stage one. But I do think it's helpful to read the stages and try to figure out where you are.
Yeah.
Because at least you can see you've moved a little.
Okay, and you know, stage six is where, you know, you're no longer triangulated with the kids. You're able to start creating intimacy. Biological parent is kind of butted out of the step-parent, step-child relationship, so that that step-parent, step-child parent relationship has a life of its own and integrity of its own. And, you know, this is where the health company, it's not saying that there are no problems, you know, and every family, there are, you know, continuing crises, continuing difficulties, but there is a family coalition that is finally created here. We have a series of stages here that, you know, typically a step family goes through. Now, it's important to recognize that, you know, while you have this family developmental stage, that this doesn't always coincide with the individual stages that people are in. For instance, a step family that forms that has teenagers and involved, the couple will be working towards inclusion and belonging, working for the cohesion of the family. Whereas the teenager in their personal development will be headed out. You know, they're working on independence, on autonomy. And so the last thing that they want to deal with is belonging to, you know, a new family. They want to get out on their own. And so that, if you expect a person who is going in the opposite direction in their individual stage to meld into the family, you're going to have difficulties there.
And also with teenagers, you've got the issue of sexuality. And there's this little girl, this teenage girl sitting there talking on the phone. And there's the new parents in the back with little hearts. It says, "Honestly, Sally, I think my parents' preoccupation with sex is just disgusting." And that's a cycle. Because in a nuclear family, the very active sexual part of a marriage oftentimes is before the child is born or when the children are young. And oftentimes when the marriage is, you know, at 16, 18 years old, maybe that level of overt sexuality is not there for the teenager to be observing. And that's where the cycles are out of whack, because now you've got this 15-year-old who's dealing with her sexuality, and there is stepfather and mom being pretty kissy face or right in front of the children. And so that cycle's out of whack.
You get an adolescence and then you get a new, new young child.
Right. And in that case, where you have, his, hers, and theirs, where the couple has a new child, where they're both biological parents, then with that biological child, you know, they're in kind of a first family developmental stage. But with the whole family configuration, you know, there's still this dissonance going on in terms of inclusion and belonging. And all you can do with that is just recognize that that's what's going on, and not fight it. Adjust your expectations.